you and know where Mr. Pond. Speak of the devil. Good evening and welcome. This is a bit of an odd arrangement for us, so please forgive us as we stumble through talking to one another from a long distance. You all have a copy of the agenda. Do we have any additions to the agenda? Seeing none, then I will have the agenda approved by consent. And the minutes from the November 24th meeting. Were there any errors or omissions from those minutes? Seeing none, I have the approval of the minutes by consent. The first item in business arising from the minutes comes from an update I'd like to give you on the French immersion meeting that I attended as a DEC member, not as a DEC chair, before our last meeting. And there was some concern expressed that DEC members were not invited to stay for the afternoon portion of that meeting. And I had a telephone conversation with the organizer of the meeting, Fiona Cogswell, and she wanted to let us know that what they did in the afternoon session of that meeting was talk to principals about what factors they needed to know about schools, about bus routes, about Wi-Fi available, about what families have with home computers in their areas. They had a very positive feedback from the principals on the afternoon session, and they basically did a SWOT analysis of all of the outside-the-box thinking that we had done in the morning. It was not a meeting to discuss how to deliver French immersion to rural schools, but a meeting to look at how French language instruction could be enhanced. Since then, they've done a detailed cost analysis on busing and how to make things work, and they've made a presentation to the deputy minister on that. So that's just for those members of the council who were concerned about that meeting and us not having a communication with the district on that, or with the department on that. Yes, Mark.
Thank you for that. I'm glad they cleared up their intention. However, it doesn't clear up the bigger issue that the deck chair was not officially invited to that meeting and should have been. And their communication style, which is not inviting the chair or the deck to different things, or giving us invitations at the last minute, I think speaks to either a bigger problem or a deep-rooted philosophy that maybe we're not really partners in education. I hope that's not the case, but that was really the initial concern that I raised. And while your explanation brings clarity to what happened there, it doesn't alleviate my concerns on their philosophy on how important are we as partners.
Any other comments on that? Thank you, and thank you, Mark. Your concerns have been duly noted, and we do have conversations regularly with the minister and deputy minister, and concerns will be passed on. So we come to the exciting part of our meeting tonight, and that is the catchment area review by our superintendent.
Thank you very much. So welcome everyone here this evening, and a few members of the public here. Perhaps most biggest reason is for this next presentation. I'd also like to acknowledge the staff that's here tonight. We have five or six of you here, and appreciate your contributions to this project as well as to the overall work that you do in our district. So tonight I'll present to you our Leo Hayes High School catchment area review recommendations. The purpose of this report is to provide to our District Education Council information and reasoning for the recommendations resulting from my review of the Leo Hayes High School catchment area. To put a little bit of history to it, to start things off, there was an interest in reviewing the enrollment at Leo Hayes High by the District Education Council. This actually began with the last council prior to your mandate. There were conversations about expansion to the school. There was a consulting firm that was hired on behalf of our district and on behalf of the Department of Education and Early Childhood Development. This consulting firm, known as Ernst & Young, did prepared a report. They conducted a study, worked with our staff to build this report, and they presented the report about a year ago now, in December of 2015. Within this report, there were a number of recommendations to address the issue of overcrowding at Leo Hayes. So the overall objective of the work that I just finished and the work that the council has kept in mind over the last year is really to address the overcrowding at Leo Hayes High School. If you look at the functional capacity, the 2015 data would suggest the functional capacity with the modular classrooms in place. There are 8 modular classrooms at Leo Hayes. The functional capacity would be 92.2%. If we didn't have the modular classrooms in place, that functional capacity would be 101.6%. That's 2015 data. I'll show you some 2016 data here before I'm finished tonight. When you talk about functional capacity, which is simply a formula that talks about or describes how full a building is, we would consider anything above 80% to be classified as a building that's considered full. Following the delivery of the Ernst & Young report in December, the DEC assumed the responsibility for reviewing the catchment area and making subsequent decisions about it. The council from the previous mandate formed a subcommittee of councillors and worked with staff to analyze the Ernst & Young report and come up with some recommendations for council. That subcommittee presented to council in May of 2016. The catchment area recommendations from the subcommittee aligned with that Ernst & Young report, and there were 4 major recommendations that came from the subcommittee. The first one was the movement of the students in the area below Portobello Drive, reaching to the Burton Bridge. Second one was the movement of students in the area between the Princess Margaret Bridge and Portobello Drive, including that neighborhood of Portobello. Movement of students in the Durham Bridge area, and the movement of students in the Keswick Valley area. So the DEC took some action on that particular night. At the May 2016 public meeting, the council not only adopted the report, but also approved the recommendations. At that same meeting, the council also approved an addition to Leo Hayes High School as its number one priority for major capital construction. The addition that was described by council on that night was for a skilled trades area that was estimated to cost about $1.9 million. As an aside, we expect here in the next week or two, we're hopeful that government will make its announcements on which major capital construction projects will be approved for the upcoming year. Of course, that's a decision made by government, but I know that they take into account the priorities as described by the district education councils. It's also important to note that Leo Hayes is a P3 facility, which is a public-private partnership. So the building isn't owned by the province of New Brunswick, but there is an agreement that allows for the province and the district to manage Leo Hayes and operate it as a school. So we move now into our new mandate with you as the current council, and in September of 2016, at the public deck meeting, I submitted a proposed action plan for your consideration and approval. And within that action plan, there was a determination that I would host 3 public meetings to share information and to provide an opportunity for parents to participate in the discussion. The meetings, which actually were similar in nature, they were to occur on October 13th at Nashwauk Valley Elementary School, November 9th at Keswick Valley Memorial School, and November 28th at Leo Hayes High School. And in fact, the meetings did go forward as planned. From that, I was to submit recommendations to you as a council on December 8th, which is where we are tonight. And this is our regularly scheduled public deck meeting. So when we look at our next part of the presentation, we can focus on the citizen engagement responses. Related to our public meeting number 1, it was held on October 13th at Nashwauk Valley Elementary School. There were approximately 55 to 60 members of the public in attendance. In addition to this meeting, we received 11 pieces of correspondence from 8 people who resided in the areas of Taymouth and Durham Bridge. I could actually update that because I got a 12th piece of correspondence this afternoon at about 3 o'clock. But, our presentation was already completed by then. Here are the things that were heard. Concerns about the movement away from the city of Fredericton, where people work, attend their appointments, conduct business, shop, use child care services, and participate in activities. A division of community of Taymouth and Durham Bridge. Perceived negative impact on the Nashwauk Valley Elementary School. Varying academic options of a large high school versus a smaller high school setting. The perceived impact on student well-being. Perceived differences in treatment for rural versus urban communities. The boundary changes disrupting families. The travel time on buses being longer for some students, although shorter for others. And there was some correspondence, one in particular, that showed the support for movement towards students towards the Stanley Consolidated School as their zone for schooling. I can note that with the 12th piece of correspondence, the themes were very much in line with what I've described here. So these are... this is a description of what was heard in the feedback. Obviously, it's a summary. We had a meeting that lasted a couple of hours, and the correspondence that came through that we looked at very closely. The second public meeting was on November 9th, 2016, at Keswick Valley Memorial School. At that meeting, There were approximately 18 to 20 members of the public in attendance. We didn't have any specific correspondence from the people or families who reside in this Keswick Valley area within the time frame of this study. So what did we hear? We heard some similar concerns about the movement away from the city of Fredericton where people work. They attend appointments, they conduct their business, they shop, and they participate in their activities. Talk about varying academic options of large high school versus smaller high school setting, including education support services. The perceived impact on the student well-being, the boundary changes of disrupting families, travel time on buses longer for some students, shorter for others, and a perception of poor road conditions, especially in the winter. So some similarities here between meeting number one and meeting number two. Public meeting number three was on November 28th at Leo Hayes. Approximately 20 to 25 members of the public were in attendance on that particular night. This meeting provided an opportunity for all stakeholders, in particular Majorville residents, to participate in the discussion. I can note that this meeting was in addition to, specific to the residents of Majorville and Lower St. Mary's, that this meeting was in addition to a community meeting held on June 14th, and that was right in Majorville, where we had an invitation as superintendent and the current deck chair and vice chair, where we listened in on a community meeting. We had eight pieces of correspondence from seven people who reside in the Majorville area. What are the things that we heard at this public meeting? We heard about concerns for those who are below Portobello Drive about the movement away from the city of Fredericton, where people work and attend appointments, conduct business, shop, use child care services, and participate in activities. Also a little bit of talk specifically about the impact of related fees that are paid. Heard about a division of community of Lower St. Mary's and Majorville, and the impact below Portobello Drive is minimal in numbers. It really doesn't impact the overall enrollment at Leo Hayes High School. Some talk about the zones for weather related to the cancellations being different. It was noted that the capacity of Bliss Carman Middle School was high. Felt that there was this was a target on rural areas, and the perceived impact on student well-being, as well as boundary changes disrupting families. So from those three meetings, you can see some recurring themes. The one that stands out the most is the general movement towards the city of Fredericton, where people conduct their business. Some other recurring themes that arose, whether it was through the meetings and conversations or correspondence. Why change the catchment area right now? The enrollment is projected to decline at Leo Hayes until 2022-23 and then start increasing again. The construction of a new academic wing at Leo Hayes, in addition to a skilled trades wing, has been talked about in the past, and in fact the skilled trade wing is now being considered by government. There were conversations about French immersion, conversations about grandfathering. The DEC decision to proceed with the Ernst & Young and subcommittee reports without public consultation was noted. And there were many statements about personal circumstances, some within academics and some outside the world of academics. And there were conversations about the goal of the project seeming to be more about adding to the enrollment of Nackwick High School, Stanley Consolidated School, and the Oromocto schools, all with lower functional capacities. So these are the themes that we would have heard over the course of the consultation that we had, and the themes that we talked about as a team as I prepared this report with my co-workers at the district office. A little bit of data. I'm not sure how well you can see this chart. By the way, this report will be available online. We'll make sure that it's posted here at the end of the night and available for you to see from our website. But this is a list of all of the schools who were impacted with the original plan that was decided upon by DEC. And whether it was ascending school or a receiving school. And we've updated it with 2016 enrollment as well as the 2016 functional capacity values. And for your interest, Leo Hayes High School with the modular classrooms has a functional capacity of 89.44% this year and a functional capacity of 98.5% without the modular classrooms. Enrollment is at 1,686 for a September 30th number. It's noted that the next highest school when it comes to functional capacity would be Bliss Carbon Middle School at 83.76%. So now it comes time for some recommendations. And these recommendations will be presented as individual recommendations. And I'll ask that the DEC consider each recommendation on its own accord and in addressing the objective of the project, which is to reduce the overcrowding at Leo Hayes High School. Recommendation A, leave the applicable Nashwauk Valley catchment area as it is at the present time, with students staying at Devon Middle School and Leo Hayes High School. The rationale for this, the feedback from the consultation indicated that there is a general movement of families towards the city of Fredericton as opposed to the village of Stanley. There are some students who would have a longer travel time to Stanley, and it would have significant impact on the community. Recommendation B, examine the area of Zionville Road in greater depth and in collaboration with the specific families who live in that area to determine a possible move to Stanley Consolidated School in the future. A rationale, the area is closer to Stanley than Fredericton. Currently, there are 20 students in grades K to 12 that reside in this zone that I'm speaking of, with 7 of the 20 already attending Stanley Consolidated School at this time. The enrollment count really doesn't significantly impact the objective of this study, which is why I make the recommendation to look at it closely again outside the scope of this work. Recommendation C, move the high school catchment area for Keswick Valley Memorial School students currently at Leo Hayes High School to Fredericton High School. Students in current grades 8 to 12 would be grandfathered until graduation from Leo Hayes. Our rationale for recommendation C, the feedback from our consultation indicated there is a general movement of families towards the city of Fredericton as opposed to the town of Nakowick. Some students would have a longer travel time to Nakowick High School. It would have an impact on the community. The current catchment area for Keswick Valley Memorial School students attending Leo Hayes is adjacent to the Fredericton High catchment area, which would allow for an easy transition. The current grades 4 to 7 students at Keswick Valley that are under the current Leo Hayes High School area amount to 62 students. So this is the approximate impact of movement once the grandfathering is completed. Of course, I have to use the numbers for the lower grades right now to have a look at the future. So grades 4 to 7 someday will be in grades 9 to 12. And when they are, after the grandfathering is finished, we see it now as a move of 62 students. Recommendation D, not divide the community of Majorville at Portobello Drive, resulting in students attending school in Fredericton. Our rationale, the feedback from our consultation indicated that there's a general movement of families towards the city of Fredericton as opposed to the town of Oromocto. The impact on the community. There are 25 students currently in this zone from grades K to 12, and 2 of them attend school in Oromocto at this time. Similar to my previous recommendation, when we look at current grades 4 to 7, students from Portobello Drive to Burton Bridge under the current Leo Hayes catchment area, this amounts to 6 students. And this is the approximate impact of movement once the grandfathering is completed. Recommendation E, move the high school catchment area between the Burton Bridge and the Princess Margaret Bridge in total that currently go to Leo Hayes High School to Fredericton High School. The middle and elementary students would continue to attend Devon Middle School and Barker's Point Elementary School, as opposed to Bliss Carman Middle School and schools in the town of Oromocto. Students in current grades 8 to 12 would be grandfathered until graduation from Leo Hayes High School. Our rationale. The feedback from our consultation indicates there's a general movement of families towards the city of Fredericton as opposed to the town of Oromocto. The impact on the community. The current catchment area for these students attending Leo Hayes is adjacent to the Fredericton High catchment area, allowing for an easy transition. Bliss Carman Middle School is fuller than Devon Middle School. There would be minimal impact on students traveling by bus. If you look at the current grades 4 to 7 from Majorville, Lower St. Mary's, in the current Leo Hayes catchment area, that we have about 35 students. So this is an approximate impact of movement once the grandfathering is completed. Recommendation F. Closely monitor the out-of-catchment transfer requests associated with attendance at Leo Hayes to prevent inadvertent contributions to increased enrollment. An accurate tracking system is required. This is a recommendation that's really impactful on me, perhaps more than the DEC, as I have that responsibility. But I put it out there for all to see, because we certainly acknowledge there's some work to do in this area. I'll provide some rationale. The Leo Hayes High School has approximately 85 students who are zoned for another school that attend Leo Hayes. This includes French immersion students. Our tracking system shows approximately 30 students in attendance at Leo Hayes who are zoned for another school. What this describes is that we don't have a method for tracking those changes that include French immersion students or those who might simply register at Leo Hayes and stay at Leo Hayes without completing the out-of-catchment transfer process. Likewise, if we go in the opposite direction, there are about 60 high school students who are zoned for Leo Hayes that are attending another school. So you can see the net change there of about 25 students. Of course, this includes French immersion students. Our tracking system shows 35 students have left Leo Hayes for another school. I'd like to make some general statements. Addressing the issue of overcrowding at Leo Hayes is really a greater focus than increasing the numbers in Stanley, Nakwick, and Oromocto. Fredericton High School has the capacity to accept more students. The data is presented on an earlier slide. Stanley Consolidated School recently underwent a consolidation of the elementary school and the middle high school to create a K-12 school. There's been a recent sustainability study on the three schools in Nakwick, and numbers will be monitored for the future. The Ernst & Young report recommended looking at enrollment projections for Leo Hayes again in 2018 to ensure accuracy. The Ernst & Young report also recommended looking at construction of a new wing at Leo Hayes prior to 2021. And I just noted it from an early slide. I believe I said 2022-23 when we see that enrollment change. If memory serves me right, it might be 21-22, but those it's one of those 2 years. It just escapes me right now. So what's ahead? According to Ernst & Young, the enrollment at Leo Hayes is projected to decline by about 100 to 110 students in the next 5 years, at which time enrollment is expected to increase again. So that's looking at 2021-22, 100 to 110 students. The first enrollment projection by Ernst & Young did not decrease as much as forecasted. So they had projected 1,590 students at Leo Hayes for this school year, Then they gave two additional numbers with a 2.5% error and a 5% error. The actual enrollment this year at Leo Hayes is close to 100 students more at 1686. Another anticipated, non-anticipated value that couldn't have been considered at the time of the Ernst & Young report was that 260 international students have enrolled in Anglophone West schools since January of 2016. 30 international students currently attend Leo Hayes. I think right at the time that Ernst & Young was presenting, that's when the conversation started to surface about the anticipated influx of international students, in particular from Syria. And I seem to recall he noted that, Kevin Doucette from Ernst & Young, but it wasn't within his work as that work was completed earlier in the fall. The number one major capital construction priority of the DEC is the addition of that $1.9 million skilled trades wing to Leo Hayes. And this recommendation has been given to government and for consideration, and we're hopeful to hear some news in the next couple weeks. One idea that wasn't taken into consideration in the Ernst & Young report is the concept of moving high school students in the entire Barkers Point Elementary School catchment area. I'll show you the map in a moment. So that catchment area includes the community of Noonan, Pepper Creek neighborhood, the northeast side of Fredericton leading up to the Princess Margaret Bridge. We've already talked about the Princess Margaret Bridge to Burton Bridge, so my numbers that I'll present here momentarily don't include those numbers. So if we use today's numbers for grades 9 to 12, that would amount to 201 students. If we use the current numbers of kids in grades 3 to 6, this would amount to 192 students in 2022-23. So I put this out there for a consideration for the future, should Leo Hayes require further reduction in numbers. So with the recommendations that I made, we could see more than 100 students, a little more than 100 students, moved out of Leo Hayes into Fredericton High once the grandfathering is completed. If the feeling was, or if the projection suggested, that a significant number more needed to be considered, then this is a backup plan that could be looked at. I would caution that the planning should include consultation with the stakeholders. That's a look of the map. So as we move in this direction, it's towards Minto. And in that direction, it's the border within the city of Fredericton. If the capacity at Fredericton High ever became a concern in the future, then the Office of the Superintendent and the Fredericton Education Center could be relocated. So when would we start to think that Fredericton High might be in trouble? Well, we could go as far as 2,250 students to reach a functional capacity of 80%. At that point, we'd probably start watching the numbers a little more carefully. The movement of students from the recommendations that I've made tonight, in addition to the entire Barkers Point Elementary catchment area, would amount to about this 2250 number. Currently, we're looking at 1,900 students at Fredericton High. So at the end of the presentation, you can see that I've listed the six recommendations again for your review. Next steps. And these are outlined in the implementation plan that was presented in September and the plan that we agreed to follow in January. You as a council will either confirm the original motion from May 2016 or you'll make a combination of new motions should the revisions that I've recommended tonight be desired. Any specific details with respect to any changes would be communicated to all affected parties in that time frame of February to June of 2017. So I really recognize that changing school catchment areas is a difficult process from everybody's perspective. I felt it was important that people had the opportunity to voice their opinions on what was being proposed in the Ernst & Young report. I certainly offer my thanks to those who participated in the consultation process. I appreciate the attention and the engagement of parents and other families and stakeholders throughout the process. I found that the information and input received, whether it was at the public meetings or through correspondence, was very valuable. I appreciate the work as well as the team of the team that I worked with in preparation of this report. And I need to note that each point that was made, any information that was shared was carefully considered in developing the recommendations that now are to be taken under advisement by you as the council. So that is the report.
Thank you. I just want you to know that we can't see you out there, so we know you're there, but are there any quick questions? I know we will take a good portion of January's working session to go through this, and I know everyone's going to spend some time looking at it between now and then, but are there any questions that you need to ask before we go off to do that? Mark?
Madam Chair, just more for the superintendent to frame, I guess, our thoughts as we look at this report and, go into January. I guess, for me, and I know we had this discussion last year, but this is a new deck, regardless of someone returning or not. So I guess I would want to kind of know the thoughts of the superintendent. When I read, of course, the Act, the regulations, provincial policy, and specifically our policy, it seems typically that catchment area is really a responsibility of the superintendent, especially in taking the lead, consulting the DAG, doing public consultation. And I only bring it up because it's in the presentation, and I want to say very good presentation. But we just keep coming back to the past, and I want to move forward from the past. But the last step, because it's in the presentation, I want to talk about it a little bit. Decided they would take the lead on it, so it just doesn't seem. I guess the question to me, from what I read and experience, it doesn't seem very typical that the process that played out the first time is what would normally happen with catchment areas. And it was really highlighted to me when we did some policy training in Moncton and those that were able to be there, that one of the dangers of committees, and I want to say the first committee did a great job and appreciate the hard work of all that stuff, but sometimes it's a danger as committees that we can do, one of the things he said was committee should not do the work of the deck. They should help the deck do the work and should not do the work of the superintendent. And I guess I say all that to say it's almost like maybe in our attempts to do the right thing the right way, we may have overstepped. And am I off in my thinking? I just wondered what typically is done when it comes to catchment areas and maybe some experience, just to frame our thinking, because we're going back and taking this report and it says, the deck can do this and the deck can do that, but right now we basically have a very professional, highly skilled employee that reports to us with, I'd like to think, highly skilled staff that have prepared a report. And so what should our thinking be? What is this typical process of catching it? I just need that cleared up.
When I reflect on the process that we participated in over the past year, we've gone through a number of steps. If we were to do something like this in the future, my preference would be that that the exercise I've just completed with staff right now be the first step in the process prior to any decisions being made. Mark, you're right in that the legislation would suggest that this responsibility falls to me as a superintendent. I acknowledge that the council was very much engaged and wanted to make play an active role in trying to make our overall district a better place, and that can't be understated. It's the process we followed is one that I accepted, I suppose it's incumbent upon me, and in fact you have created policy that would suggest if the council is overstepping their bounds on the responsibilities of the superintendent, then I better speak up. In this particular case, my speaking up was with the proposed implementation plan in September, and I'm very grateful that the council approved it and that we moved forward with it as it was written. I have great confidence in the recommendations that I have made tonight. My hope is that the council will accept them in their entirety. I also hope that when we meet and prepare for that, that you ask me a lot of questions and you dig in deep and you try to really understand why I came up with these recommendations. I'll invite the team that I work with to be at that meeting as well. I would say for the sense of completion, we're in it now. So my hope is that the council will support these recommendations and that we'll roll them out. And I think that if we run into, if we ever run into something where the responsibility of the superintendent comes to the table again, that we have a good conversation about it. I'm not sure if that answers. Okay.
I think if I can just add a little to that, you have to put that all in the perspective of a council that had been looking at significant overcrowding in the school for years and repeated requests for an enlargement that we couldn't get. And so maybe the passion of dealing with that influenced some of the process. But yes, good thoughts on process. Anyone else? Okay, we'll finish. Are there any further questions for the superintendent on this report? Mark?
I just have a concern not to underestimate the importance of what my colleague wants to bring up, but just on process and maybe this might be, I'm just trying to hold my agenda while I'm speaking. It might be something I said that we need to agree to.
Yes. Thank you. So, so we'll finish with this item on the review, on the update from the superintendent, and I would ask your permission to add a new item under new business, an item from Stephanie. Is there anyone who objects to that? Seeing none, then we will add a new item to the agenda under new business. I think we will do it I think we'll do it right away.
Would you like to do it now? Oh, okay.
Yes,
all
please.
Right. First of all, I'd like to state this is my own. need a microphone.
Can you use the mic?
I'd like to state this is my own opinion. Does it turn on? Okay. So I'm just going to start by giving a quote, and I'm going to end with a motion. So what I'd like to say is that the quote that I'm going to make is from Catherine Dontermont, Commissioner of Official Languages. This is from a CBC article, June 28, 2015. Bilingualism should be stated as an essential competency for those aspiring to high-level positions in the public service. Public servants aspiring to lead employees from the two linguistic communities would thus know that they cannot expect such privilege if they do not speak English and French. Public servants wishing to influence the future of this province would know that in order to fulfill that role, they have to speak both of the official languages of New Brunswick. This quote points to the direction in which New Brunswick is moving. Given the rates of success for the immersion program that have been discussed in the media and in the legislature in recent days, somewhere between 4 to 10% of our children may be eligible to apply for many positions. The other 90 to 96% of our future generations, depending on the success rate of immersion, also will not be entitled to influence the future of the province, which means having a state setting policy and leading their fellow New Brunswickers. According to Doug Wilms, a director from the Canadian Research Institute for Public Policy, only 230 graduates across New Brunswick graduated with advanced proficiency in 2013. Bilingualism is becoming necessary for those who wish to work for government. Whether good or bad, the government of New Brunswick is a major employer in our province. It encompasses nurses, paramedics, librarians, social workers, and teachers, just to name a few. Even commissionaires and others who are contracted to government are required to provide bilingual service in many places. Recent debates in the media and in the legislature have made it clear that the immersion program needs to be looked at. The English literacy rates on English language assessment fell under the previous French immersion system. After the move to a grade 3 entry point, they improved. Under the current proposed grade 1 immersion system, students will not be engaging with their mother tongue until grade 4. This does not augur well for our future English literacy rates. One need not be a rocket scientist or an expert in the field of education to foresee a sharp decline in English literacy should this program go ahead. To do so would be at best misguided, at worst, willfully reckless. There are a few more quotes that I would like to share with you from a special report to Statistics Canada on bilingualism in 2011. It was co-authored by Jean-François Lepage and Jean-Pierre Corbeil. 50 years ago, the initial work of the Royal Commission on Bilingualism and Biculturalism laid the foundation for what would become the Government of Canada's policy of official bilingualism. In the years following the commission, the rate of English-French bilingualism in Canada increased, but seemingly reached a plateau in 2001. What are the bilingualism trends in Canada? What factors are behind the recent slowdown in bilingualism across the country? In 2001, 17.5% of Canadians, or 5.8 million people, reported being able to conduct a conversation in both English and French, up from the 12.2% reported 50 years earlier in 1961. In Canada, the proportion of bilingual people went from 17.7 to 17.5 between 2001 and 2011, even though the number of bilingual people rose continuously. Quebec was the only province in which the rate of bilingualism rose steadily between 2001 and 2011, from 40.8% to 42.6%. In 1961, the rate was 25.5%. In the rest of Canada, the rate of bilingualism went from 10.3% in 2001 to 9.7% in 2011. In 1961, the rate was 6.9%. So the authors further go on to state that studies show that bilingualism continues to be concentrated in the bilingual belt, which is an area of frequent contact between Anglophones and Francophones that includes parts of Quebec and the parts of Ontario and New Brunswick that border Quebec. The last quote that I will share from this report states that across Canada, the rate of bilingualism in 2011 was 44% for Francophones compared to 8% for Anglophones. In 2012, In New Brunswick, the rate of violent illicit per ambulance was 14.9 in 2011. There was commentary recently by Sue Rickards, who wrote about language needing to be lived in order to learn well. Mostly, students' engagement with French and beyond the bounds of the classroom. Our French immersion teachers are doing a great job. This is not about your teaching. Students speak French at school and then go home to an all-English environment. This underscores that the authors of that special report on bilingualism have stated that there is a very distinct bilingualism belt. It is very difficult for those who do not engage with the French language both in and out of school to gain advanced to superior proficiency. It is also very difficult for them to retain what they have learned after completing their school careers. So due to the proceeding, I would like to make a motion that a deck committee be struck to look at the last 10 years of the immersion program with particular attention to the various rates of proficiency and where in the province there has been the most success. Which year saw the best rates of proficiency and which saw the worst? The committee should also look at the correlation between English literacy rates on the English language assessments and the previous immersion program. The committee will compile a report with analysis and then submit it to the DEP to be forwarded on to the Minister of Education.
Thank you very much. So basically, my motion is that a committee be struck.
Do we have a second? Do we have a seconder for that motion? Seconded by Wallace. Any conversation? Heather.
I guess my thought is I understand what Stephanie is saying and the concerns. My thought is that if we contacted the department, there would be a lot of that data already there. So I'm not sure how you can access that data, but there are some other things that would be involved in terms of English literacy. Could be the literacy leads and the number of literacy leads that have gone through changes in the early years. But I do agree that there are concerns about this, and I'm just not sure if that's the way to go about it. Sorry. Through the chair to Stephanie, but there is some validity in having some data, because we do have a lot of students who are not going to have that proficiency, regardless of, I believe, the grade one or grade three proficiency, and depending on the area that you live in, and the ability to access the language and use the language on a daily basis has a significant effect. What we would get from that, I don't believe would change what is going on in the province right now. And that's my only concern, is that if we decided to put a lot of effort into gathering data, I don't think that anything is going to change what's happening right now.
So you think there's no point in striking the committee?
I'll let you speak to the motion, for see if you have any other comments first. Anyone over here?
Just a question, maybe. Based on the information that Stephanie is asking for, how hard would it be for, again, not necessarily going through committee, although I understand that's the motion on the floor, but how hard would it be for either our superintendent to get it, or for something like this being taken back to the council chairs and getting it at a provincial level to be disseminated to all that? So I don't have a list in front of me of all the data required, and I'm wondering, is that possible?
We have access to provincial assessment scores and a data and accountability supervisor who manages that information. There would be a variety of assessment scores that we could look at, whether it's those that are currently, as you might recall, we're in a bit of a transition when it comes to provincial assessment, but if we looked at some of the former assessments of grade two English language, grade 2 literacy, grade 4 literacy, grade 7 literacy, and the grade 9 English language arts proficiency assessment were the traditional assessments when it comes to literacy and English language arts. And then we would have assessment scores in grade 10. It's a sample for French second language, as well as the grade 12 French second language oral interviews. So we have access to data provincially and for our districts.
Stephanie?
I would just like to have a motion voted on, and if maybe people are not interested in committees, then we could go the other route and ask the department for the information.
Okay, so we have a motion on the floor that, do you have the wording, Carol?
I'll need to get the motion from Stephanie.
Okay.
Do you want me to read it out again?
Sure.
I would like to make a motion that a DAC committee be struck to look at the last 10 years of the immersion program with particular attention to various grades of proficiency and where in the province there has been the most success. Which year saw the best grades of proficiency and which saw the worst? And the committee should also look at the correlation between English literacy rates on the English language assessment and the previous immersion program, the grade 1 entry. The committee will compile a report of analysis and submit it to the DAC to be forwarded on to the Minister of Education.
Okay, so the motion is on forming a committee. Were you going to?
I just have one question. And I'm wondering, and I know I understand Stephanie's desire to have a vote on it, but you know, if we had a presentation on some of the data, what it would look like. Basically, my concern is if we defeat the motion, it might give a message that we don't want to go forward and we don't want this. I'm almost thinking that if Stephanie would be open to table the motion to a future date until we can get our bearings a little bit, because it may be after we receive some information from the superintendent that we may want to pursue a committee to examine that information further. I guess I'd like to hear Stephanie's thoughts on that suggestion, tabling the motion until we can get some more information.
I'm willing to table the motion. That sounds fine to me. And get the data and proceed. I think that's a good idea.
Do I have to vote on that? On tabling?
And I would make a motion to table this motion to a future meeting.
We need a seconder.
Need a second
or seconded by Terry. So we have a new motion to table Stephanie's motion to form the committee until such a time as we have a chance to look at the data and get our feet under ourselves, I think you said.
Yeah.
Great. Any further questions or comments?
No questions or on the debate.
On the table. Okay. Thank you. So, all in favor of tabling the motion, signify with aye.
Aye.
Contrary minded? Nay. Thank you. Motion to table is approved. Thank you, Stephanie. That leads us into a report on the integrated service delivery model. And I'll hand it back over to David.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to introduce Catherine Blaney. Catherine is the Director of Education Support Services for the Anglophone West School District and is perhaps the director, educator, leader in our district who understands ISD, the Integrated Service Delivery Model, the most as we prepare to implement next year. Catherine's going to take 15 or 20 minutes to talk a little bit about ISD. She's provided you with some information for your own reading, as well as a PowerPoint that I'm going to try and find here. Right here it is. And I will click as Catherine talks. So over to you, Catherine.
Thanks, David.
with clusters of schools, and those clusters will range in the number of students from around 1,100 in the Minto area, so that cluster, to around 35 in the Fredericton area, 3,500 in the Fredericton area. There are different number of professionals on that based on the number of students and their needs in that cluster, and that's open to revision as needed, I believe, as we move through the implementation. schools are very important as we move through with this, because it will be an adjustment for how we operate together, both the child and youth team members and the health and social development and public safety. So it's important to keep our principals up to date on what is happening. I met with principals in the fall of 2015, right after my first meeting, and asked them how they would like me to communicate with them. They asked for emails, very concise emails, but emails nonetheless. And so that is what we do after every committee meeting, implementation meeting. We send out 3 messages from our meeting, so that information is sent out to all of our principals. And we have space on the portal where all of our documentation is held, so that they have access to it whenever they need it. That is a very brief overview of how I see it.
Do we have any questions? Heather.
First of all, I think the theory of this model is excellent, and the integration of the services is something that education has wanted for a long time. With that said, and maybe it's just because I'm so fresh out of a school, but there's never enough time to address all of the mental health and behavioral issues within a school with the staff that is existing. So I want to go on record as expressing my concerns about the reconfiguration of guidance or resource, some of those, and I would prefer, and I'm just going on record with this because I know it's not going to happen, but I would have preferred that the ISD groups, the teams, were in addition to the resources that were already in the school, that there will not be any reconfiguration of guidance or resource. And my concern about that is, and I understand how it's gone in the southern part of the district, and I believe that there are some schools who would say it was it's a great model. I think you might find some other schools who did lose some of their resources, and they would not agree with that at the same time. So I think you could find both. I think sometimes when you take away some of those services, it increases the workload for the administration or the other staff that's there. I do have concerns with those families who will refuse the services. And I can think of families that we try to get involved with some of these services in schools in the past and they refuse to get involved in the services, so I'm not sure. That part I don't know that, how that works if they refuse that. And just finally, my other concern is about the relationship building that with our students who, and I believe that these other people are capable of building relationships, but on a day-to-day, first thing in the morning, maybe every day at recess, every day at lunchtime, having somebody check in on some of these students who are most vulnerable, whether it's a child in kindergarten or a child in grade 11, having that consistency is very important. So that part concerns me, that if we're losing some of those services, that that might be a question.
Thank you, Heather. Did you have any immediate responses, or will we just let that? Yeah, okay.
I've heard the concern with the FTE. I did have an opportunity to travel down to Charlotte County. And again, Charlotte County is unique in, because it has been doing this for 5 years, and it's a well-oiled machine in Charlotte County. I talked to 3 different principals, one in elementary, one in middle, and one in high, and all spoke very highly of this model and stated they would never go back to the way it was before. We are going to have certain
Yes, Mark.
Just a question on the ages that are being worked with, because I know social development normally works with youth up to age 16, maybe, I don't remember. But, you know, obviously they're in school past that. And then, so how's it going to work for the integrated service delivery?
Integrated service delivery will work with students, with children from 0 to 21. If you're in school past the age of 19, if you're a school age student, you can work with ISD up to the age of 21. We have Anne Marie Hayes, who's working collaboratively with her colleagues to talk about how to gain access.
And the only concern I would add would be the spacing. Again, I forget the word you used for
therapeutic spaces.
For Sean's engagement in looking for spaces. I know that we are looking for spaces for French immersion classrooms as well, so that's just another on the record concern. Any other questions? Wallace.
I guess just for the record, I want to go on the record to say that this is another hit against the rural schools. I mean, most of our rural schools have 44, 45. And from talking to David, I believe that these teams have to be made up from rural schools. Each school has to give up a percentage of that. So if you have a school that has 0.4, so guidance teachers there on a Tuesday and a Thursday, but now we're going to be there one day a week. What do you do with those child that acts up on Monday and the guidance teacher is not there until Friday? I'm like Sheila, or guess if these were additional staff and the teams, I can see them work and they respond. And another hit again against the rural schools is that your numbers are so much higher in the town schools that they're going to get all the response time for this versus the rural schools that work at any time. So it's just a concern that I have, and I've heard that concern from the rural schools already.
Well, I know the child and youth teams are working with all schools. And again, the purpose for the child and youth team is to have equitability in service. So it should not matter for whether you're a rural school or an urban school to have access to a child and youth team.
I think the access is going to be there, but if you've only got a team that's got so many problems in the town schools, and you've got problems in the rural schools, they ain't going to have time to get there. And again, we don't have the local staff now because we've taken out of those positions, but they can't deal with it either. So I think you're going to be putting a lot more workload on to the principals, and if the school's lucky enough to have a vice principal to actually deal with this stuff, I see some of those behavior problems in the school now. And I don't think that we should be taken away from those, we should be adding to those. Yeah.
Anyone else? Thank you very much. We have been contacted by the Education Early Childhood Department looking for representation from a council member on the Provincial Curriculum and Assessment and Evaluation Committee, which is a combination of former Curriculum Committee and Assessment and Evaluation Committee. So I have one name to present for you, and that is Heather Hogan. Is there anyone else on council who would be interested in serving on that committee? Seeing none, could I have a motion then that we submit Heather's name to the EECD for our representative on that committee?
Second.
Moved by Marion, seconded by Terry. All in favor of that motion?
Aye.
Contrary? Thank you. Motion carried. Tenure education plan. We have time set aside in our January meeting for discussion. We will have a representative from the ECD come to speak with us in our working session in January for about a half an hour, given your cooperation on that. And that will be a look for our input. I'm not sure what she will come with, so that will be an interesting half hour for us. We also had talked about having some district conversation with our district staff working on that. Will we have that at the same?
We can.
Mm-hmm.
Work at the priority unit?
Yeah. Except that's a busy evening for us anyway, yeah.
We can put the priority unit in February if you'd like.
Okay. So we'll move ahead. It's a 10-year plan, so I know there's not a huge urgency for us to, although it would be nice to know that we are being consulted on it.
Madam Chair,
yes.
Although that 10-year plan may expire in 2 years, is that right?
Possibly. Very well possibly. Committee input, is that what we had for?
Input through the survey.
Yeah. So the other thing that the ECD would like to do is send out a link to a survey to all DEC members and PSSCs, and I'm asking for your approval of that as well. I don't think we need a motion. Is there anyone who doesn't want to see the link? That would be for our consultation as well, so we'll ask for that. Are you ready to go?
I am ready to go.
Okay. Superintendent monitoring report on our quality high school program.
So as a part of the annual planning cycle, our superintendent monitoring report for tonight is policy ASDWER6 on quality high school programs. I appreciate the support of the Director of Curriculum and Instruction, Diane Kay, in helping to put this report together. This policy calls for our DEC ensuring that we have quality high school programs within our district, providing quality education to our high school students, offering sufficient courses that are enabling students to acquire the skills, the aptitudes, knowledge for them to be successful at their next level of schooling or in the workplace. We have a little more than 7,500 high school students. So high school is grade 9 to 12. 5,600 of them are in the English program, with 1,943 of them in French immersion. And we have 19 high school settings in our district. Last year, we saw 1,785 students graduate from Anglophone West in June of 2016. You can see that we have 1,997 potential grads for this year. Among our 19 high school settings, 6 are K-12 settings, 5 are grade 6 to 12 settings, and 8 are pure high schools grade 9 to 12 settings. The smallest high school settings that we have include 45 and 58 high school students in Cambridge Narrows Community School and St. Mary's Academy in Edmundston, respectively. And our largest high school settings include Fredericton High with 1,900 students, Leo Hayes High with 1,686, and Oromocto High with 1,079 high school students, respectively. In actual fact, Fredericton High and Leo Hayes are the two largest schools in our province, enrollment-wise. 9 of our 19 high schools offer French immersion programming. There are formal assessments, provincial assessments, offered in the high school setting. They include the English language arts proficiency assessment and reassessment, which would be a graduation requirement. There are also French second language oral proficiency interviews, in the oral proficiency evaluation for grade 12, as well as the provincial assessment for grade 10 reading, math, and science, which we will see in the very near future. Our high school students can provide feedback through a variety of different ways. The Our School survey, formerly known as Tell Them For Me, is one such way, and in fact is underway right now, collecting feedback from high school, from students, I shouldn't say. We're talking about high school students now, but it goes beyond high school students. These results will help high school administration and staff plan to better serve and meet the needs of students. The results are available publicly. Every 2 years, high schools have the option to participate in the New Brunswick Health Council Wellness Survey that provides us quality data on healthy eating, physical activity, mental fitness, and tobacco-free living. And we also have a provincial exit survey for grade 12 students. I believe, Kimberly, you and I got that email within recent days. So the data from 2016 high school graduates. When it comes to the official dropout rate for Anglophone West, it's measured at 1.7%, which is a touch above the provincial average for Anglophone schools. And 0.3 above the provincial average when you take into account all the public schools, which would include Anglophone and Francophone system. We have 5 high schools that offer level 1 and or advanced placement courses. 4 high schools have served a total of 50 students wishing to conduct independent studies in 2015-16. And the number to date for this year is 33. 11 of our 19 high schools run at least one locally developed course, and 18 of our 19 high schools had students enrolled in an online course in the first semester of this year, totaling 227 students. The number of exemptions from French second language instruction in high schools is at 33 for this year to date. We had 36 in total last year. The number of transfers from French immersion to the English program in high schools is at 86 this year to date. We had 76 last year. You'll see in Appendix A that the data is summarized for you. All 19 of our high school settings offer courses in the skilled trades and technology education and life skill courses. We have some wonderful partnerships that help serve our high school students. Among them are the Learning Partnership Turning Points Program and the Take Our Kids to Work Initiative for grade 9 students. In November of 2016, we saw about 87% of our grade 9s go to work with a parent or a trusted person for the day as a part of that nationwide exercise. The New Brunswick Teen Apprenticeship Program and VTAP is a unique program that serves 15 students from 7 high schools. I think it's worth pointing out, as I recall from this report last year, we've doubled our numbers in the teen apprenticeship program. There are some other opportunities as well. I think of the Sir Charles G.D. Roberts Medal for Literacy Excellence, expanding into all high schools. As well, we see high school students invited to participate in a literacy speak out event. All of our high schools have school-based guidance counselors or teachers, guidance teachers, who are supportive of many emotional, social, and career planning needs. Likewise, each high school has school-based resource teachers that support the academic needs and specialized learning for students with exceptionalities. Together with school administration, these individuals make up our ESS team, Education Support Services team, that Catherine noted earlier. And these teams do meet regularly and keep minutes of their meetings. We have 8 nurse practitioners serving high schools in Anglophone West, and we have 2 full-time public health nurses in each of the 3 education centers within our district. So I've mentioned Appendix A a lot. It's basically a fact sheet that just shows some factual information about advanced placement courses or level 1 courses. You can see now we're starting to build up a year by year description of offerings, independent studies, locally developed courses, and the information is here. Online learning, distance ed, French second language, exemptions and transfers, those numbers are here and show a 3-year pattern. This is an interesting chart that shows our 19 high school settings and the skilled trades and life study courses that are offered in each of these schools. And you can see that in our high school settings, there are a variety of courses that are offered to students. Some of our high school settings do offer the technology skilled trade courses on a rotational basis once every second year. A little bit here about partnerships and our Take Our Kids to Work data, as well as the teen apprenticeship program. I probably could have said tripled the numbers and gotten away with it. You can see here 15 students for this year, with 6 last year and the 5 the year before. We've expanded that to 7 high schools from 4 high schools in the years before. And of course we have our nurse practitioners and healthy learner nurse program that's operating in our schools and in our district. So that report is available to you, of course, on our DEC portal, and it'll become a public document as well and posted to our Anglophone West website.
Any questions?
Okay.
Yes, Mark.
Six high schools out of, 19 that offer level 1 or advanced placement courses. That's it.
We're at 5 right now. This Harvey is included as the 6. A couple of years ago, it offered modern history 11-1, but no longer does. Fredericton High, Heartland Community, Leo Hayes High School, or Mukto High School. Woodstock High School.
And is there a chart that talks about the number of electives per high school?
No, I don't have that as a part of this report.
So then the general, two questions. All schools would offer some electives. All high schools would offer some electives.
That's correct, yes. So every high school has a requirement to offer the graduation requirements as well as a series of courses that would be considered as prerequisite for post-secondary institutions.
So all the high school, which probably answers really my second question, so all the high schools offering enough to pursue post-secondary?
Correct. In some cases, in some cases there is a need for courses to be offered on a rotational basis, so that in a 2-year rotation, whether you're in grade 11 or grade 12, you'll have the opportunity over that time period. And in some cases, there's a need to turn to distance learning. But for the most part, we would see. Well, we must see the graduation requirements and the courses required for post-secondary prerequisites offered. There are some interesting electives that are offered not only in our larger schools, but in some of our medium-sized or smaller schools as well.
Heather.
Registration.
We see it happening in a variety of different ways. In some cases, there may be an open period where a teacher is assigned to the course and to the room, where a variety of students who have chosen an online course for that period would report and work on their course. So a teacher may be overseeing 15 or 20 kids who are doing 15 or 20 different courses, and the teacher serves as a facilitator, and the actual teacher of the course is somewhere out there in the province. In other cases, the distance ed learning is accessible to a teacher who wants to use it as a teaching resource and may register in the class to use with that particular teacher's class and students that are sitting right in front of them. That we see that happening as well, because the online course is sort of a packaged course that allows the student to, you know, to progress at a different rate and different times. We also see distance ed courses helpful in picking up credits outside of the regular schedule, or perhaps an additional credit to make up for something that was missed as they continue to pursue graduation on time. So there are a number of different scenarios where we see distance ed being offered.
If I was in high school in St. Mary's, how do I access, and I had space or I wanted to take an additional course, I'm sure guidance would help with that, but I'm looking at all of the options at FHS, so can I take advanced courses that
sure.
may not be offered? Because I'm thinking of some of our rural schools,
mm-hmm.
That was one of those concerns that was spoken about at one of the meetings.
Right.
So any student has an opportunity, or I don't want to put words in your mouth, but to take advanced courses or online courses that maybe aren't offered at their school. That was more
right. And distance ed shouldn't be confused with initiatives where two schools might pair up and teach a course through either a Polycom, and that's kind of more what you're describing. When it comes to distance ed, there's a menu of courses that are available, and it's taught by an assigned teacher from the province who can be anywhere in the province to teach that class. But your other description wouldn't necessarily be considered distance ed, although they may use the resources from online learning, but we see partnerships where a smaller school can align their schedule with a larger school, and let's just say at a smaller school there might be three or four kids who want to take an advanced calculus course, and through the cooperation of the other school and through a Polycom system, a video system, there can be a partnership where they can do that particular course. We see that a little bit in our school now, in our district now.
Sean?
Yeah. Do we offer online or blended learning to any grades underneath the high school, or is it just specific to high school?
Right, it's just at the high school level, and mostly at grade 11 and 12 in the credit system, although we're starting to see it see it evolve into 9 and 10. There's some work on that.
And then, sorry not to leave this background of the controversial conversation, but part of that conversation with that meeting that Kimberly then talked about, the infrastructure for wireless and Wi-Fi technology, was the setup and use of online learning part of that?
There are some French immersion courses within that menu of online courses within our province. We've been investing in improving the infrastructure by the addition of switches and I'm looking at Sean now for the words access points and switches. Over time, we've been investing in upgrading our wireless technology, the components that allow the technology to run more smoothly.
Just a quick question about the French second language exemptions. Can you explain those?
So in our province, it's a graduation requirement for a student to finish or to complete coursework in French to the end of grade 10. In grade 9 and grade 10, it's 90 hours or a single semester course per year for both grade 9 or 10. In middle school, it's 200 minutes a week. There are times when, for reasons of a personalized learning plan or perhaps the second language choice of Maliseet, we see students make application to be formally exempt from studying French second language. That's an option, and there's a defined process that a student and the parent must go through, and it's a formal process that includes documentation in the student's cumulative record. The two biggest reasons would be students who are on a personalized learning plan and the plan being somewhat individualized, as well as a number of students who have the opportunity to study Maliseet. I think of our First Nation students who are looking to learn more about their language and culture in the school setting. When it comes to French immersion, from time to time we see students who are enrolled in French immersion and have continued on throughout the grades, but they may reach a point where they wish to stop the French immersion studies and move back into a straight English program. The percentage of time in French second language classes under the umbrella of French immersion, that percentage of time decreases as we move through the high school setting, with 50% of the time in grade 9 and 10 and 25% of the time over the course of the 11-12 credit years.
Anyone else? Thank you, David. How many of you have engaged in any self-evaluation lately? We have a policy that we are to self-evaluate, and I thought about calling Mark and saying, make us up a test fast so we can do it on Thursday night. But it's been a new year, and we're all getting used to things, and we're going to rewrite some policies. What I really hope is that you are familiarizing yourself with the policies, and so that you know, because some point in time in my lifetime, maybe Mark will make a mistake, and we need to be able to catch him on it. Next year, we will have to design some kind of self-evaluation and decide how we're going to do that. At one point in time, we wrote a test every working session and graded ourselves on how well we were doing in understanding the policies. I don't know if we want to ever go back to that, but some form of self-evaluation. Please keep in mind that we will move into rewriting policies, and we need to know what we have before we can rewrite them. We didn't have committees on the agenda. I want to make a note that we again will be establishing committees, policy, rewriting committees, and we have a number of policies that we need to look at right away. Just a quick reminder that when committees meet, it's important that we have brief minutes with people attending and brief agenda, that sort of thing. correspondence, we've had some invitations to meet outside of the offices here, and we're going to think about that and get back to the different groups that have invited us to meet at their places. So if there is a group that has sent us an invitation, we will be responding, but we haven't had a chance to think about it and talk it over well. Do we have any public comments tonight? Yes. I can barely see you now.
Yeah, I can stand up or go to a mic if you like as well.
Can we hear her?
I can hear you. Okay. So my name is Erin Roberts, and I just wanted to provide some feedback regarding the catchment area rezoning recommendations. First off, I would like to thank the superintendent for taking into consideration the public feedback. So I think you did a great job of doing that. And I am one of the parents affected by the Nashwauk Valley rezoning. So recommendation A. And so your recommendation to keep that community together is excellent and much appreciated. Unfortunately, I'm also part of recommendation B. I live on Zionville, and I am a member of the Tamuk community. And I am going to get upset, but I would encourage you not to force those students to go to Stanley. You are still dividing a community. Tamuk does go up to Zionville, Highland Heights. Those are all areas that are going to be impacted by forcing them to go to Stanley. So I would encourage you to allow them to stay where they are at Nashwauk Valley and go into Devon and Leo Hayes. I have three children affected, one attending Leo Hayes next year, one attending Devon Middle next year, and one at Nashwauk Valley. And I would like them to continue doing that. That's why we bought where we were, and my husband and I both work in Fredericton, and that is a convenience for us to have our children in town as well. Now in that area, students are able to decide if they want to go to Stanley or Devon Middle or Leo Hayes. And we opted for our children to go into Fredericton, and I would encourage you to allow the parents and the students to determine where their children go. Some students do decide to go to Devon, or to Devon and Leo Hayes, and some decide to go to Stanley. And I would encourage you to allow that to stay, whereas this is a very small group and would have very little impact on your numbers. So thank you very much.
Thank you, and please be reassured that that was a recommendation to look at in the future and with consultation from parents. So any further comments from public? Seeing none, thank you all. This is the first experience for the new members of the DEC being under the spotlight. You may see now why we don't like to do it often. Thank you for coming tonight, the members of the public. Thank you for the staff members who were on hand to answer questions and help out with our presentations. Our next public meeting will be here again in January on the 26th, when the DEC will vote on what we're going to do with the report by the superintendent and the catchment area changes. Oh, could I have a motion for adjournment? Heather is nodding her head. Meeting adjourned. Thank you.